Well, hello, friends. Welcome to the Pastor's Cut Podcast. We are recording for the week of Sunday, May 12th, Mother's Day Sunday.
That's true.
It's hard to believe. We're looking at May and
Sunday,
goodness,
Sunday.
This year has flown by. That's for sure. So a hint, if you have not yet gone shopping for Mother's Day or have thought about Mother's Day, now might be a good time.
2 weeks.
Two weeks. Yes. A little less than 2 weeks. So you still
make
have
a
time.
Plan.
You can get a card. You can plan on taking your mom out to lunch if she's around town. Be sure to take your wife out to lunch. Have fun.
Yes. And as we refer to Mother's Day in my house, it's Grandmother's Day.
Okay.
It's a mother-in-law and grandma's day more than it is Mother's Day if you have extended family in town. But I did went once, I think it was last year, I saw a family taking a mom out to lunch at the taco stand outside of You Suck Vapes over.
Okay.
So do have a plan. Otherwise, you will
awful.
End up in the parking
that,
lot.
You don't think
of a,
that was the plan?
Hey, maybe they have great street tacos. Maybe that was her greatest desire. But the look on her face said, this is not what I expected, the parking lot of a vape stand. So.
Oh, my. So, moms and dads, I read a dad joke the other day that I thought was hilarious. And so, let's also share your favorite dad joke.
All right.
Or maybe a funny dad joke that you've seen recently.
Okay. Okay, as not a dad, but one that I shared with my husband, who is a dad, and made him laugh.
Uh-huh.
So how long does it take someone with a lisp to carve a spoon?
I don't know.
Just a little while.
Nice. So I saw that Sylvester Stallone is making a new movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's about musicians. And so he's planning to play Mozart. He mm-hmm. has recruited... who did he recruit? He recruited Jean-Claude Van Damme
mm-hmm.
to
Believe
play
in
Beethoven.
It so far. Yes.
And then he also recruited our dear friend Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger's just begging, please don't make me say it. Please don't make me say it.
I'll be back. Back.
There you go.
Back.
There you go. All right. Brad, what about you?
What does a indigenous Alaskan get from setting around ice fishing too much?
I don't know. I could guess, but...
Polaroids.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
All right.
All righty.
That's about where I was headed.
Celebrating families, moms and dads alike, we are looking at something that everybody encounters on Mother's Day. Darren's going to be looking at Job chapter 2 and what happens when someone has an incredible crisis. What's our response? What do we do? And so we're going to look at what happens in the life of Job and maybe look at some healthy ways to respond.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Darren may also explore some very unhealthy ways through his message as well. So with that, why don't we go ahead and read Job chapter 2. We're just going to look at a few verses, 11 through 13, and then we'll talk around it for a while.
All right. I'm going to start in verse 9.
Go
I know
for it.
We talked about starting at 11. I think I'm going to start at verse 9. His wife said to him, "Are you still maintaining your integrity? Curse God and die." He replied, "You are talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble?" And in all this, Job did not sin in what he said. When Job's three friends, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite, heard about all the troubles that had come upon him, they set out from their homes and met together by agreement to go and sympathize with him and comfort him. When they saw him from a distance, they could hardly recognize him. They began to weep aloud, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and 7 nights, and no one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was.
So much happened in a short amount of time. So as we dive into the content and the topic for the day, I think it might first be fitting for you as a community group leader to ask somebody, does anybody know the story of Job and what happened, and maybe to recap the story up to the point where we're at in the mm-hmm. passage.
Yes. Yeah. There's just so much tragedy that befalls Job and in such, like you said, just such a short amount of time. He lost his whole life, all of his children, to just tragedy after tragedy. And when you read chapter 1, it's overwhelming, just the tide that's sweeping over him. And it really gives you in the narrative a good, just a good feeling about how overwhelming that was for him.
Yeah, that's for sure. And we kind of lightly introduced the idea, but we don't really see it fleshed out until the end of the book, mm-hmm. where there's even this idea of who's the author of evil. Is God the author of evil? Does God allow evil in the middle of it? If you're always clinging close to God, is everything going to always be good, or can trouble still come your way? And so in the background, there's that theological issue mm-hmm. that's sort of floating around. And that becomes the fuel ultimately through which his three friends start coming at him, even to some extent the fuel through which his wife came at him mm-hmm. in the little bit of the passage that we read. So what, as you look at this, Marissa, if you're teaching in a small group or you're approaching this topic and you're wanting to talk about it with some folks, what's one of the first things that you want to talk about?
Yeah, one of the reasons why I love the book of Job so much is how honest it is. And when we're going through grief, it is so good to remember that we all grieve differently. Mm-hmm. And we see that in the book of Job with Job and his wife. And what she needed was different than what he needed. And sometimes the ways that we grieve clash with one another. But that does not mean that they're not both valid. It doesn't mean that both people aren't in mourning. We just process things differently. The rabbis say that Job's wife, you know, she is going through exactly the same thing that Job went through. She is fresh in her grief. I think that we often think how hateful and spiteful she was to mm-hmm. say curse God and die in the midst of all this pain for him. But she's going through the exact same amount of pain as he is. And the rabbis say that notice that no one came to comfort her. I hope that's not the case. I mean, we don't know their whole story. I hope that she had people that came and comforted her. But she is in pain. And we just have to remember as we are grieving and as we are grieving differently, that there's a difference between grumbling and lament, and that even in grief, though we should give ourselves a lot of grace and generosity to grieve as we need, that it is possible to sin in grief, that it is possible to still react harshly to other people in ways that are sinful. And that could be the case here with Job's wife, that she was embittered and angered and that she lashed out at him. Maybe she didn't think, you know, that he was grieving as much as he needed to. But the rabbis also say that when she said, curse God and die, that it may have been her desire for him not to suffer. You know, they'd already experienced so much death and loss. And then she saw him with his boils and his sickness and said, just get it over with. You're going to die. Certainly you're going to die. It would be a mercy for you to die quicker. So there's a lot of different ways that we grieve. There's a lot of grace that we need to have for other people that this book shows us. But we also need to remember that in our grief that we should not sin against God or other people with our anger and our sadness.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the first things I thought of actually had nothing to do with Job, but mm-hmm. as I think through people in the middle of crisis, in the middle of incredible grief, everybody reacts differently. You know, I look back at history and you could see in the middle of incredible financial difficulty and financial stress and seeing philosophical movements roll around, in 1789, the French decided to have a revolution. Mm-hmm. And so they literally took the streets, and that's human nature. We've seen in America again and again and again, people take to the streets and they do stuff. I wonder how much crisis could have been averted if they had a voice, if people actually would stop and slow down and listen to them instead of simply reacting and saying, no, it can't be that way. And adding fuel to the flame instead of just calming things down.
Right. Yeah. And in everything, even if someone is angry and mm-hmm. even if somebody is lashing out in a way that's not constructive, the very first thing you want to do in de-escalating a situation is to show someone that you understand their suffering. Even if the way that they are handling that suffering isn't constructive, you know?
Yes.
It's like, I see you. I understand that this is incredibly painful, that this isn't, that your suffering is real. And it can seem like, oh, of course, of course that makes sense. But to hear it from a friend, to hear it from somebody who has, you know, who's trying to comfort you means so much to have that suffering validated.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I thought of James 1:19, and maybe that's a good conversation to have around the group, just to talk through in the process. What does it look like when you see a friend in the midst of crisis or in the midst of grief, or and they don't even feel like they have a voice and they don't know what to do with that? just to come alongside of them. How would you do that?
Yeah, I think that the three friends of Job show us perfectly how to do that in this chapter.
Yes, absolutely.
They mess things up
a little later, but on, right here.
But right here, it's beautiful. And this is the way that they've done it informs how Jewish people still today comfort one another by sitting Shiva. And you know, they saw their friend. They came a great distance. They went out of their way and intentionally sought him out and sat with him for 7 days and seven nights. They joined him in suffering. You know, they also tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads, and no one said a word. And it would have been so perfect if they had continued to not say a word.
Absolutely,
because they saw how
yes.
great his suffering was. But, you know, later on, God rebukes them because, you know, the words that they ended up saying were so out of pocket. And so... so misguided and misleading, blaming Job for what he was experiencing. And so in, even in the way that they messed up, this is a, you know, we have 35 chapters in this book that show us what not to say to somebody when they're
no
grieving.
Doubt.
And yet Job, as a righteous man, you know, he intercedes for his friends. He has grace for his friends. He understands his identity. He understands his identity to God, that he knows he's not blamed, or he's not to be blamed for any of this. So thank God that he had the presence of mind and his understanding with God that helped him understand that this was not his fault. Mm-hmm. But most of us do not have that. Most of us need to be reminded, this is not your fault. This is not because, in the vast majority of cases, this isn't because of anything that you did. Regrets and what ifs and should haves, they will not do you any good when dealing with grief. It's just an opportunity to be with people, just to sit with people. And like you said, validate their suffering and be there. And it's good to point out, too, that they did not say a word until he spoke. Until Job started to tell his story and started to express himself, and they allowed him to express himself, and they should have stopped there.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
So, Marissa, what are some other topics maybe that you'd pull from this, or you'd say in a community group setting, man, this is something worth talking about?
Mm-hmm. Well, you already mentioned kind of the idea of theodicy, and which just means like the study of why there is evil if God is just. And I think a lot of what this book teaches us is that asking questions is good, wrestling with God is good, but that's not ultimately what we need when we are suffering. When we're in grief, knowing the answers why something happened, that doesn't help us at all. The pain is still there.
Yes.
What God offers us is peace through the pain, which we, especially as Western Christians, we do not like the idea that, you know, peace and pain can coexist. We think if we're in good standing with God, that pain is not going to happen to us, but it's inevitable, and we will have pain, but God's presence is with Job throughout. Mm-hmm. So this whole story, this whole poem is just... God telling Job, stop focusing on the questioning, stop focusing on the why and trying to rationalize this and put your mind around something that you will never understand. When God says at the end, you know, I've been here since the beginning. I created the universe. Where were you when I created the universe? Mm-hmm. It's not a condescending phrase, but just like, my child, you weren't there. You can't understand. But my presence has always been here since creation, throughout all of this suffering. I have always been here. So it's just this huge poem telling us, you know, actively offer genuine emotive comfort to those who suffer. That's what we really need. And that's what God offers Job. You know, at the very end of the book, Job is comforted by God's presence. He's comforted by the words of God. Before he, you know, he's still sitting in ashes and dust and with boils on his skin, and he realizes that God has always been with him, and he's comforted by that, and then God heals him. So that's what we really need, is not answers, not even sometimes relief, but just the comforting knowledge that God is with us through all of this.
Absolutely, yes. So maybe a way to break the ice or walk through it is also to talk through what are ways you find God's comfort or God's presence, whether you're going through a good time or you're going through a rough time.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were talking, I couldn't help but think, who is the most comforting person I know? Knowing that this message is going to be delivered on Mother's Day, my wife does a fabulous job of loving on our kids. And as a mom, she demonstrates such incredible love and compassion to each of them. Mm-hmm. I can't help but think that there's some level of God's compassion poured out for us that's a lot like that.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Like a hint with his chicks, right?
Yes, so, yes.
Yes, yeah. We all have, I hope that we all have people that will comfort us, that will come mm-hmm. alongside us, that even Job's wife, I read this and I think that they did have a restoration of their relationship, that in chapter 42, when he is, you know, she never comes back. Chapter 2 is all we see of her. At the end, in chapter 42, when he has his children, you know, when mm-hmm. he names his daughter and talks about his daughter's inheritance, in that I see a restoration of his marriage and the comfort that they were hopefully able to provide for one another, and the way that they raised their children with just as much love as their older children, but now with the guidance and the wisdom that they learned from this grief journey and that they learned from God. You know, we have that opportunity to be that for each other. So even if you have not experienced the comfort of other people, mm-hmm. this book affirms that we have the comfort of God at our disposal. And it also gives us the ability to become comforters for other people. So there might be people in your group who have not experienced that comfort. But yes, certainly mothers should be that for all of us.
Absolutely, yes. You know, a little detail as you read through it, the text says that Job's friends didn't recognize him. He looked different. Mm. There's something about when we're walking through incredible levels of stress, incredible levels of difficulty, it does change the way not only we think and we process things internally, but it manifests itself externally. And so whether you're going through crisis or you know other people who are, know that that's having incredible toll. There was a book that was written, Your Body Keeps Score?
Yes, yeah.
Really, really fascinating, looking at the science behind what happens as you walk through trauma. How trauma impacts us, but even in the middle of that, if we invite God in, God can bring restoration, God can bring healing. Not neglecting the soul work in the middle of it and just mm-hmm. simply leaning into God and looking for ways to find comfort from Him.
Yes, and that verse really reminded me of Naomi, who we talked about last week, how the women of Bethlehem didn't recognize Naomi when she came back, and grief really does change who we are. There's another book. I love the book that you mentioned. There's another one called My Body is Not a Prayer Request. And in it, the woman who wrote the book says that her body, she was facing this disability and this chronic illness and this pain that would never go away. And for Job, he was kind of going through that same thing. He mm-hmm. didn't know how long this would last, if he would die, if this was chronic. He didn't know if he would ever receive relief again. And in My Body is Not a Prayer Request, Amy Kinney, the author, describes her body as a scream, which has always been very evocative to me to think about that, how difficult it is to hear the voice of God when your mm-hmm. body is screaming, when your body is in so much pain. And so this book just shows how God quieted that scream for Job, and through even his most intense pain and illness, God was able to quiet Job's soul so that he could hear and feel God's presence. Mm.
That is incredibly good stuff. Mm. The last thing I thought of that was worth mentioning is, just as Job's friends responded the right way in the middle of it, they saw what was going on. They acted with compassion. In the New Testament, we see Jesus again and again and again acting with compassion, mm-hmm. even sometimes against the Pharisees, like in Mark chapter 3, when Jesus goes into the synagogue to worship and sees a man with a shriveled hand and heals the man and challenges, the Pharisees saw that guy and just were frustrated, and they were mm-hmm. waiting for a chance to trap Jesus. Jesus saw the man, felt compassion, and then responded. How many times do we filter things through our theology and to such an extent that we're looking for the right way to do things or thinking through how can we respond theologically astute mm-hmm. as opposed to looking at people and just saying, you matter.
Yes.
No matter what's going on, you matter.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me of the story of the friends who lowered their paralyzed friend mm-hmm. through the ceiling to mm-hmm. To reach Jesus, and how before Jesus healed him, he first called him friend. and healed him spiritually, helped him feel seen, helped him know that he still had a connection to God despite anything that the society was telling him about him being, you know, to blame for his physical condition.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that compassion is shown so deeply in the Gospels. And in John 16:33, he said, "I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world."
Mm.
So as we read Job, read God's response to him in Job 42 about him being creator and being present in the beginning and his presence being throughout this book and throughout our lives, we also take heart because Jesus has overcome the world, that he's overcome all that sin and death and that already and not yet and of there being an answer to all this. Because when we go through suffering, one of the biggest things that we come to realize is like, this is not the way it's supposed to be. I am not supposed to be suffering. My children are not supposed to die before me. All of these horrible things that happen to us, this is not the way God intended for things to be. And he has given us his son in an incredible act of compassion to rescue us, to redeem us, and to reconcile us to him so that that death and pain and suffering will be reconciled.
Absolutely, yes. Any final thoughts before we wrap up our recording for the day?
No. The challenge of the week is read the entire book before you learn. No.
Do it. Do it. You've got you have 12 days between now and Mother's Day.
Yeah, it's long one.
If you're listening the day that we're recording it the last day of April.
But you would spend one of those days actually picking out the perfect card. So
yeah.
You have to do that too. This is true.
It takes that long to find the right one.
Read the inside. It's really important.
Yes, it's very important.
Yeah.
Yes,
but if you don't have time to read the whole thing, read Job 1 through 3 and 42. And I think that would be at least that would give you a good context, good understanding of the story.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
All right, friends. Well, as you wrap up, Marissa will be getting us the pastor's cut here towards the end of this week. Mm-hmm. So be looking for that coming through your inboxes. And between now and then, may the Lord, and even after then as well. It won't stop with just then, but my goodness.
Just through Friday.
After that, you're cut off. No.
You're on your own.
May you feel God's blessing and peace. May the Lord bless you and keep you and cause his face to shine upon you. May God grant you peace both now and forever.
Amen. There is a boat.